9, Maryland's NPR News Station.
This is 88.1 WYPR, Maryland's NPR News Station, Community Amplified.
Baltimore school is back in session. Welcome back, everybody.
I'm News Director Matt Bush, and this is WYPR's News Roundup. Today, Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott is our guest. We will address our questions and yours. Then, later in the show, ICE and what it's meant for the start of the school year and what to do now that it's the weekend.
The play and the role, what I would be doing. It was bold and courageous to write such thing, and it was funny. So after I read it, I was down with it. It was definitely a heck of a ride.
That's all coming up. First, the news.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Investors now think the Federal Reserve is likely to raise interest rates as early as next month. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the shift comes after a speech this morning by Fed Chair Kevin Warsh.
Speaking to a gathering of economists and central bankers in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, Warsh described the labor market as stable, consumer spending as resilient, and business investment, especially in artificial intelligence, as strong. The sore spot in the economy, so far as Warsh is concerned, is inflation.
Inflation is running above our 2% target. So the Fed's predominant focus right now should be on prices.
While Warsh remained tight-lipped about where he thinks interest rates are going, investors took his remarks as a signal that a rate hike could be coming as early as September. Three members of the Fed's rate-setting committee were already pushing for a rate hike at the last Fed meeting when the central bank held its benchmark rate steady. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
The AI company Anthropic says it welcomes a ruling by a federal judge that the Trump administration acted illegally by blacklisting it earlier this year. The judge said the move amounted to unlawful retaliation for constitutionally protected speech. NPR's John Ruich with more.
The ruling stems from a festering dispute between Anthropic and the Pentagon. The two sides disagreed earlier this year over how the military could use Anthropic's AI. And in February, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth designated Anthropic a national security supply chain risk. That label's been used in the past for institutions affiliated with foreign adversaries like China, Iran, North Korea, and Russia. Anthropic sued the Pentagon in March. The ruling in its favor issued Thursday says the government illegally blacklisted Anthropic, trying to make an example out of them because they were critical of the administration's views. In a statement, Anthropic says it's focused on working productively with the government to harness AI for national security. John Ruich, NPR News.
Jurors have resumed deliberations in Lindsey Clancy's trial in Plymouth, Massachusetts. Deborah Becker of member station WBUR is covering the case in which the jury is deciding if a labor and delivery nurse should be held criminally responsible for strangling to death her three young children in 2023.
There are a couple of options for the jury, which is made up of nine women and three men. Those include convicting her of first-degree murder or finding her not guilty because of her mental health. Now, to reach that verdict, they'd have to find she did not know right from wrong or that she could not obey the law. Now, these so-called insanity defenses rarely succeed, but in this case, criminal defense attorneys say a jury might believe that the only reason a mother would do something like this as if she was mentally ill.
Deborah Becker reporting. An inspection contractor finds a chemical tank at a paper mill in Washington State was unfit for service less than a year before its operational failure resulted in 11 deaths. This is NPR News. At least one person is dead after Russia launched another wave of drone attacks on Ukraine's capital, Kyiv, and nearby regions. The latest Russian assault comes as President Vladimir Putin has vowed to punish Ukraine for its own drone strikes on Russian infrastructure. From Moscow, NPR's Charles Means has the latest.
In recent comments, Putin has said Ukraine had opened, quote, Pandora's box with its sustained drone attacks inside Russia and promised to up the pressure on Ukraine in return. On Friday, that came in the form of repeat Russian drone strikes on more than a dozen homes, as well as shipping and commercial warehouses. In turn, Ukraine struck an oil facility to the northeast of Moscow, the latest in a string of attacks on Russian energy infrastructure that have caused gas shortages nationwide. With fighting along the front line, line yielding little gains for either side. Both Ukraine and Russia have upped attacks on critical infrastructure in an attempt to damage one another's economies and undermine public morale. Charles Maines, NPR News, Moscow.
Norway is mourning Europe's oldest monarch. The palace confirms King Harald died this morning in Oslo at the National Hospital. He was 89 years old. The Norwegian monarchy serves a largely symbolic role in a democratically governed country of more than 5.5 million people. But Prime Minister Jonas Gahr Støre says, quote, "The people of Norway are left with a deep sense of gratitude for a long life in the service of Norway," adding it continues to mourn the monarch. I'm Lakshmi Singh, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include United States Postal Service, dedicated to putting reliability at the core of USPS Ground Advantage to help businesses operate smoothly. More at usps.com/groundadvantage.
It is 2:06, and you are listening to listener-supported WIPR, Maryland's NPR news station at 88.1.
Support for WIPR comes from Wells Discount Liquors, family-owned since 1937. Wells offers a collection of wines, beer, spirits, and ready-to-drink cocktails for the summer season. Located at 6310 York Road and online at wellswine.com. And from listeners like you.
And good afternoon. Welcome to WYPR's News Roundup. I'm Matt Bush, news director of the award-winning WYPR News Team. This week, our guest is going to be Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott. Public safety, the start of the new school year, transportation, a surge in ICE detentions, and swimming lessons are all on our list. If you have a question, call us 410-735-1616, 410-735-1616. You can also send questions via voice memo or emails to newsroundup@wypr.org. We will also have an immigration attorney on a little later to talk about all those recent surge in ICE detainments and how communities can stay safe. Last month, a University of Maryland pharmacy professor, Burhanu Kibrit, was detained by ICE after receiving a Teacher of the Year award. We'll speak with his attorneys about his fight for release. And with the new school year in full swing, an education expert tells us what is on the minds of teachers. And, of course, tomorrow is not a school day, so what should you do this weekend? Stay tuned. There's night markets, music festivals, the state fair, and actor Lance Cody Williams will talk about his role in Bocking, just extended at Baltimore's center stage. That's all coming up, but first, we have Mayor Brandon Scott on the line with us. Mr. Mayor, welcome to the show.
Thank you, man. Thanks for having me. Good to be back on YPR.
Absolutely. School is starting up. City students went back this week. We're going to get to that in a minute. But first, national headlines this week or this month published by national outlets. Killings plunge in a city once known for violence. The second graph, Baltimore has recorded fewer homicides than ever at this point of the year.
We're acknowledging that, but we still have a long way to go. We lost people this weekend, and that's too many people for us. Everybody working together, most importantly, our residents, is what did it.
Obviously, residents have long sought this, and it's being achieved. The number of arrests is going down, too. So we're at this point right now in the city with this crime rate and the reductions in it. What is next? What is there to do to keep this going and to drive the numbers down even further?
Well, we have to stick and keep with our strategy and keep with the things that are working, Matt. Like, we built this comprehensive violence prevention plan 5 years ago. We're actually now taking public comment on the next version of that. And that 5 years ago, I just want to remind you, the listeners of YPR, how maybe with the listeners of YPR, it was popular to have a comprehensive approach and an actual plan that didn't just sit within this year to the next, as we've had done forever. But to have a long-term plan, but it wasn't a very popular thing then. Now, all of these headlines that are talking about how we operate and how we focus through public health and how we balance community violence intervention with constitutional and focused policing is a popular thing, but in the beginning it wasn't. But we have to continue that work. We have to continue focusing in through law enforcement on the flow of illegal guns into our city, holding the people that pull the triggers responsible, those that traffic it, and sometimes even the companies and stores that are selling them responsible. We have to also focus in through GVRS on the very small, less than 2% the population who are the most likely people to be the victim or perpetrators of gun violence in the city, all for people who deserve that second chance, a chance to change their life through a letter they get from me, and for the other folks who refuse to adhere to the demand to stop the violence, then we'll remove them. Continue to invest into CBI, whether it be Safe Streets, We Are Us, all the other things, Uncle T and the folks that challenge the change, all of the things that have worked from our perspective here that has allowed us from a policing perspective to have, as you said, fewer arrests, but higher quality arrests, clearance rate for homicides at as high as it has been in my lifetime, turning over cases to the attorney general, our U.S. attorney, the state's attorney, that are great cases and allowing them to do their prosecutorial work while we also work with our community members and building in community, continuing to invest in recreation and parks in the way we have, and schools. All of that together is how we continue to do. We cannot rest on our laurels. We have to continue to evolve and grow the strategy. We have to continue to grow GVRS around the entire city. We have some districts left that remain, but this is not something where we just stop. Baltimore has seen reductions before, never to this level, but we have to continue to work together, every single part of the city, in order to make sure that we maintain these reductions.
One thing you said there right at the start was stopping the flow of guns, and that's something. Exactly. How much do you have the control of that, or how much does the city have the control of that? Obviously, the federal government plays a lot on gun laws in the U.S.,
there's no stomach for gun control right now, right? It should be, right? But when you think about this, and it's not just the same for Baltimore, 60% of the guns that we recover here in Baltimore come from other states, right? YPR talks about extensively the transportation issues for Baltimore. And so when that gun is in the hand of some young man in West or East Baltimore, who in some cases had never been to the other side of town, we know for sure they didn't go to Podunk County, Florida, or Georgia to buy that gun, right? We understand what is happening there. And we've had some success in building trafficking cases. Obviously, we've had success in dealing with like ghost guns with our suit against Polymer 80, the nation's largest ghost gun manufacturer that ended their business, not just in Baltimore and Maryland. Now the company itself is struggling, right? We had won the largest lawsuit against any gun store in Hanover Armory last year because we knew they were purposely putting guns into the hands of people in the streets of Baltimore that shouldn't have them. But that is just you're right. That's a stopgap thing. What we actually need is for our federal government to do what their number one responsibility is, and that's to keep Americans safe. And what they claimed they would do way back in 1999 when I was in ninth grade and the Columbine High shooting happened. We need real gun laws and things from the federal government. Well, and in light of that, those of us at a local level will continue to do everything that we can.
It was back to school for city students this week, and report card for Baltimore City Schools shows there's progress, but still much to be done. Reading scores in the city increased by almost 16%, twice as much as the rest of the state, but city schools still have the lowest SAT scores and graduation rates in Maryland. Transportation, one of the things being blamed for that is thousands of kids in Baltimore are unable to get to school on time due to unreliable public transit. Our news partners at the Baltimore Banner have looked at that extensively. Here you are this week after dropping your own child off at school talking about the importance of attendance.
Attendance is the key for me. If they are here on time, then we know everything else will follow. So we need them to be here. We need them to get a good breakfast.
What progress has been made on this issue and what still needs to be done?
Well, we know, listen, a lot needs to be done. But when we're talking about transportation, this is why, and for me, Matt, this is very personal, right? I know that for some folks who may be new to Baltimore and folks who read this stuff in the Banner, it might be shocked. But those of us who lived it knew for a long time, and this is why Baltimoreans have been asking, demanding, fighting, pushing for MTA to be properly and fully funded for the majority of my lifetime. I know what it's like to have to get up at 5:30 to make it to school at 8:15, right? I know that. I lived that life going from Park Heights to Merville every day. I know that I was blessed that after school and after track practice, it actually made better sense for me to catch the bus downtown and catch the subway back up. instead of going straight across town. This is why we're pushing for the Baltimore bus plan. This is why we're pushing for MTA to get the funding it deserves. This is why myself, Senator McCray, Comptroller Lieberman, when she was a delegate, fought now as something's happening to have that board, more regional board oversight from the local governments around MTA, because we have to make sure that we're funding that and supporting MTA in a way from a state level that allows us to do, quite frankly, what every other major city does in the country, right? You're not going to go into major cities and see the districts yellow busing kids. If whether it's New York, Philly, wherever, they are catching public transportation. We need to build our system to make sure that that is happening here too. But outside of that, I was at Katherine Johnson School of Money to celebrate their winning the fourth quarter attendance challenge. We know that this is a big thing also for Dr. Dawson and for our schools, because it's not just about the transportation. It's also some of the things that are happening within the families and how we have to educate our families. And schools are doing a great job of doing that, whether they're going out to the homes, making the phone calls, knocking on the doors, doing every social media, everything that they can to get the young people into school. And we really have to make sure that this grows into being a real city issue, not just for those of us who have children, people who may have little cousins or nieces or nephews or just your neighbor, making sure that the entirety of the city is pushing for our young people to be in school, ready to learn, because that unlocks everything from them. We're very pleased with the progress that we've been making in city schools. Like you said yourself, we're outpacing the state in growth and repair, especially coming out of the pandemic. But we know we still have a long way to go, and we want our young people to be the best version of themselves, and that starts with being in school.
Well, one thing that hasn't had, unfortunately, problems getting around right now is infectious diseases. There are 31 confirmed cases of measles in Maryland to the north. Our neighbors in Pennsylvania reported 2 deaths from measles this week. The city is continuing to offer all child vaccinations, including for measles, despite President Trump's latest executive order cutting down on the number of recommended vaccines. What do you want parents to know as the school year starts about this particular issue and what the city's offering and helping?
Yeah, we want still for people to get vaccinated. We've already seen that this latest executive order is causing confusion for parents, not to mention that it puts the most important thing, our young people's health, at risk. Families deserve clear guidance from health officials that is grounded in science, not conspiracy theories, not stuff on the back of a McDonald's burger or French fries, but science that protects our young people's health. Here in Baltimore, our policies are the same. We continue to follow the guidance of the American Academy of Pediatrics. Our health department continues to follow the Maryland Department of Health, which sets the immunization schedule for public school students. We will continue to provide the full suite of childhood vaccinations in Baltimore. And while we don't yet have the data for this school year and previous years for city schools, we've seen consistent rates around or above 95% for all vaccines in the Childhood 7 series. And we know that this executive order can be alarming or confusing. And for parents looking for guidance, please reach out to your child's doctor or reach out to the health department so that we can continue to keep our young people safe.
We're going to talk about ICE now. That's also affecting schools as the school year starts. In the past 2 weeks alone, ICE has detained 1,300 people in Maryland and Virginia, most of whom have no criminal record. Many of these detentions are also taking place without warrants. You recently visited Commodore John Elementary School, where ICE detained 2 adults back in June. Outside of it, how will you hold ICE accountable? Can the city hold ICE accountable for the unlawful detentions taking place within the city and if they are near schools or in schools? And what more can you do to your office to keep immigrant communities safe in the city?
Yeah, I think, listen, the truth of the matter is we understand that we cannot control the policies of this federal administration, and I use that word lightly, but we're going to continue to make our local stance very clear. We want to work to equip our residents with information regarding their rights and services and resources that we will continue to provide. And while we provide those support to the loved ones who have been impacted by detentions through my Office of Immigrant Affairs and our Safe City Baltimore program, but we also want to continue to look at all of our options, working with our state partners here in the governor and attorney general, our city solicitor. We take every action that we can toward off this and all these other insane things things that they're doing to really erode our freedom and democracy in America, which should be shameful. And being there on Monday and talking with those young people and seeing the joy in the faces, but hearing some of them who are still, excuse me for 1 second, there's a ambulance driving past. Yeah, you're good. But when they have experienced something like that, it's the trauma, right? But I think, I mean, the most important thing that the folks can hear from me, again, is that you hear from the president and his folks, this is about making cities safer, right? All of these things that they're doing, whether it's ICE, a National Guard, or this or that, but it's the furthest from the truth because they're not going after the most violent folks. If they were doing that, we know that they would put their mugshots on TV and they would be having AI videos and all these other insane things that they do, telling us how they've gotten the worst of the worst out. Because I want to be very clear, for us, I don't care who you are. If you're born in America or born in Antarctica, if you're someone that's committed acts of violence and crimes, then we want you to be held accountable in a court of law. But the people that they are going are people that are just working folks who have been working with their families, who are dropping their kids off, who are working for our local businesses, who are owning local businesses. And that is the most un-American thing that they have done. And they've done a lot of those.
You have a couple of listener questions for the mayor this afternoon. First comes from Blanca in Baltimore, saying while the mayor may not be able to talk about ongoing litigation between his office and the Office of Inspector General, what would the mayor say to maybe to residents who are reading about this particular case and seeing all the heavily redacted documents and the cost of legal fees? What would he be able to say to them as they read that?
Yes, I cannot talk about ongoing litigation, but I will say this, right? And I've said this before. We follow the laws of the state of Maryland. And even when you think about for your listener, and I did this at a press conference, you guys weren't here. There was this thing about this Monty investigation that they were doing for Sidestep and how we had redacted all of these papers and all of these documents. Well, two things, Matt. One, the city didn't redact them. They were redacted when they got sent to the city because the folks were following a law and know that they couldn't share even with us some of the people's financial information and some other things. But more importantly, that we have provided more than three times of papers and documents unredacted. Anything that we redact under the laws of Baltimore City, because we are also responsible for protecting our residents and other folks and the city from lawsuit. We are going to follow the law, and what we're doing and talking about in our case is how we can do that. We all believe in Inspector Generals, but even Inspector Generals have to have guardrails. They have to have standards, and most importantly, they have to follow the law.
Something completely different from another listener, John from South Baltimore, wants to know about the city. Is it offering swim lessons and any plans for it?
Yeah, listen, we're at the end of outdoor pool season in Baltimore. Our park pools remain open for a few more weeks, but our community pools are closed. And we built a bunch of learn to swim activities and program options. Registration will be opening next week for the indoor pool fall programming, including water aerobics and swim lessons. I know this very personally. My oldest, Saron, learned to swim through Rec and Parks at Middle Branch Rec Center. I will tell everybody to make sure that they look out for that info for Rec and Parks and on my social media to sign up. Or you can just visit Rec and Parks' website, and it has a list of programs that you can sign up for, from everything from the swimming, the water aerobics, obviously the sports programming, to hiking, to kayaking lessons and kayaking guided tours in the harbor. Director Moore and team of Rec and Parks has done a great job of not just opening all the new rec centers and pools and playgrounds, but really expanding the programming for everybody, even through our therapeutic division in recreation and parks, which is going to be a big focus for us.
Last question for you very briefly. We've gone through touched on quite a few topics this week, but one thing you did was you issued a very strong statement of support for Mayor Eddie Melton of Gary, Indiana, amidst the power outage in that city that's now about 2 weeks old. Why is that city, you think, not getting the support it deserves, nor the press coverage that it probably needs right now for such an issue to be going on in a city and in the United States?
I mean, it's Gary, Indiana. It's black, right? Like, that's if we're going to call a spade, Gary, Indiana. And I love my brother Mayor. I spoke to him 2 days ago. He's feeling a lot better, and things. He says that they have turned a corner, and things are starting to happen. And thank me and all of our brother and sister mayors from Alma for our support for them. But we know what happens sometimes when there are cities that people deem unimportant, right? Gary, Indiana has been much aligned like Baltimore for a long time and put down upon on the media, even as the home of the immortal Michael Jackson. And we know that that's what happens for towns like that. But as long as I'm in my position as mayor of Baltimore, but also more importantly, the president of the African American Mayors Association, we're going to be there to support our brother and sister mayors.
Mayor Brandon Scott of Baltimore, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Coming up next, we're going to talk to an immigration attorney, Amma Frimpong, about the surge of ICE detainments in Maryland. I'm Matt Bush. This is WYPR's Friday News Roundup. Stay with us after this short break.
Did you know that Maryland was once a center of whiskey production in the U.S.? On the latest episode of Maryland Unfolded, host Tom Hall explores the history of the rye whiskey industry in Maryland, how it developed, how it declined, and how the tradition is being revived today. That's Maryland Unfolded, available the first and third Thursdays of each month at WYPR.org or wherever you listen to podcasts, and made possible in part by Gallagher LLP.
Check out the latest episode of Your Child's Brain, a podcast series produced by Kennedy Krieger Institute with assistance from WYPR. I'm Dr. Brad Schlager, president and CEO of Kennedy Krieger. Join me and my guests, Drs. Stephanie Morris and Jayshree Blakely, as we discuss neurofibromatosis and its impact on brain development. New episodes of Your Child's Brain are released on the first Thursday of every month at WYPR.org, KennedyKrieger.org/YCB, or wherever you get your podcasts.
12 years ago, President Obama shook the conscience of a nation. He wore a tan suit to a press conference, a suit that has since gone missing.
It's not like finding a needle in a haystack, because I have found needles. But in this case, I don't even know where the haystack is.
I'm Elsa Chang. The search for the Yes, We Tan suit on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Don't miss All Things Considered this afternoon at 4 here on WYPR, Maryland's NPR news station at 88.1.
And welcome back. You're listening to WYPR's News Roundup, our weekly show examining some of the big issues facing Baltimore and our region. In the past 2 weeks, ICE has detained around 1,300 people in Maryland and Virginia. The surge is part of a nationwide uptick in detentions. The Trump administration claims it's going after the worst of the worst, but many of the people being detained have no criminal record.
The volume has increased. The tactics are getting more violent, to the point where now we're even hearing about electroshock gloves.
That was Josie Fior Sampanor, the National Communications Director for immigrant advocacy group We Are CASA. Earlier this month, a judge allowed the Trump administration to revoke temporary protected status for Ethiopian asylum seekers, adding to the list of groups Trump has denied TPS. Maryland is home to approximately 42,000 residents of Ethiopian descent, many of whom are now in the crosshairs of ICE.
Well, right now, about 5,000 Ethiopians are facing the possibility of deportation due to a judge's order issued on Tuesday. The order clears the way for the Trump administration to end their temporary protected status.
To talk more about the ramping up of ICE activity and new threats immigrant communities face, Amma Frimpong joins us. Amma is an immigration attorney and chief of services for We Are CASA, an advocacy group working to keep immigrant communities safe amidst increasing ICE activity. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much. Good afternoon.
Now, as we mentioned, in the past 2 weeks, there's been this huge surge in Maryland and Virginia. Can you explain why this is happening right now?
Sure. Look, I mean, what we're seeing is a continuation and clear intensification of, ICE's mass detention and deportation efforts. Under the Trump administration's, hateful, racist, white supremacist agenda. And so, when you look at what is happening, this is an intentional effort to essentially round up individuals who are hardworking spouses, parents, neighbors, who have called the United States home, who have called Maryland and this region home for several, several years. When you look at the, you know, looking at the number of individuals that ICE claims that they arrested over that 2-week period, of that 1,300, 70% have no previous contact with a criminal legal system, right? So these are not individuals who are causing any trouble. These are, you know, these are the people that we work with every single day. And some of these individuals, until recently, when the administration de-documented them by stripping away protections that they had, such as temporary protected status, they were here lawfully, right? And so what happens when the administration takes away the protections that they have, now they are vulnerable to being arrested and being deported. And I will just point to a video that the Department of Homeland Security posted last night on their social media, which is just a disgusting video of Haitian migrants, right? Black people shackled at their hands and feet in the rain being marched onto a plane in the night. It's black and brown people in chains, in cages, and trying to move them out of this country after they've called this country home for several years without incident.
Now, students went back to school this week in the city, and they're going to go back in other places around Maryland next week. Earlier this summer, ICE detained two individuals outside of Commodore John Roberts School in the city.
You cannot do
this to him! This is school property! This is school property!
ICE had pledged not to conduct operations at public schools. With the new year, school year starting, many communities are concerned about the threat posed to students and parents. And some reporting this week from Maryland Matters and the Baltimore Banner show that public school enrollment for Latino students is dropping in Maryland for the first time in years. And both the University of Maryland College Park and the University of Maryland Baltimore are seeing big drops in first year graduate students. So all that news is school starting. What are you seeing right now about potential ICE operations happening in schools, and what should people know?
Well, the first thing that I want to point out is our, you know, school leaders, our elected leaders need to, you know, stop trying to play nice with ICE, stop trying to rely on assurances that ICE has been providing for the past year and a half, right? During the early months of the administration, we heard school leaders say over and over again, our students will be fine. ICE has promised us that they will never come on school grounds. And we see that that's absolutely not true, right? ICE is not a trustworthy organization. ICE is a dangerous criminal organization, and we need to treat them as such. And what is happening is that our children are afraid to go to school, right? ICE's goal is to sow terror within immigrants, within immigrant communities, to the extent that people are so afraid to leave their homes. People are so afraid to go to school, go to the hospital, just live a normal, free life that they decide to go back to their home countries, right? Places that they fled persecution and torture from. So that's what we're seeing, is children afraid to go to school. This is, you know, one of the reasons that enrollment rates are going down. And for those children that are in school, they can't even focus on school, right? Because what they are thinking about is, when they leave school, will their parents come home that day? And then we have children who are being bullied in school, right? They are being bullied because of the fact that their families might be susceptible to immigration enforcement. So overall, we are hearing just the repeated and very valid fears and concerns from our students, from our parents, and we really need our, we really need the Maryland State Department of Education to be a model, right, as to how our school districts should be protecting our students across the state.
Just very briefly, this ruling on TPS for Ethiopian asylum seekers, what impact is that going to have on the state? Again, as we said, 42,000 state residents are of Ethiopian descent.
Oh, my goodness. So one thing we have to remember is that what comes with TPS is also work authorization, right? The ability to work legally within this country. And so with TPS being revoked, we have we now have people who are not going to be able to work legally, who are not going to be able to provide for their children, are not able to pay their rent, are not able to buy food, right? And so this is going to devastate our community. It's going to devastate our economy. And then outside of that impact, again, this means that these individuals are now going to be vulnerable to arrest, are going to be vulnerable to deportation, oftentimes in an expedited manner without even having a chance to defend themselves in immigration court. So the revocation of TPS, you know, for populations such as Haiti, Cameroon, Ethiopia, where we have such, you know, large populations within our state, this is going to have a devastating impact on us.
Anna Fernbong is an immigration attorney with the organization We Are CASA. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up, we're going to be talking with attorneys for a Maryland professor who's been detained by ICE. You're listening to the WYPR News Roundup. I'm Matt Bush. Stay with us.
Then the interrogation started. Together with 12 of my friends, I was charged with conspiracy to assassinate Stalin.
Join us for stories of people's lives intersecting with history. That's next time on the Moth Radio Hour from PRX.
Don't miss the Moth Radio Hour every Saturday at 2 here on WYPR, Maryland's NPR news station.
Now commencing a scan of the radio. On this channel,
skip.
Next is the talk radio program funded by a billionaire with an agenda.
DSA endorsed Muslim.
That's a no for me.
And here's a local public radio station.
Wait, like NPR?
Sort of. It's a station that broadcasts local programs along with some NPR shows, some BBC shows, and more.
I loved listening to NPR as a kid in the back seat. Damn, I'm feeling a bit nostalgic. I'll tune in.
Wherever you are in life, the backseat of your parents' car, your first apartment, or your new home, WYPR is there with you. Stay tuned throughout all of life's phases.
Support for WYPR comes from the Enoch Pratt Free Library. Pratt is accepting applications for the Teen Library Board open to Baltimore City students in grade 9 to 12. More information on the program and registration at prattlibrary.org/teen-board. And from listeners like you.
And welcome back to WYPR's News Roundup. I'm Matt Bush. Higher education is also hitting immigration-related hurdles this fall. The University of Maryland College Park facing a roughly 30% drop in the number of new graduate students enrolled. Our news partners at the Baltimore Banner reported that drop comes in response to new visa restrictions proposed by the Trump administration that are scheduled to go into effect next month. Back in July, when University of Maryland professor and Baltimore resident Dr. Berhanu Kibret was detained by ICE and remains in detention on July 21st after receiving a Teacher of the Year award from the American Association of Colleges of Pharmacy, Dr. Kibret was taken into custody at the Dallas-Fort Worth Airport. He's being held at the Diamondback facility in Oklahoma. Ever since, here to discuss the details of his case are his attorneys from the Garfield Immigration Law Group, Saran Barahi and Rania Dubinay. Thank you both for coming on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Saran, we'll start with you. You've been working on Dr. Kibret's case from the beginning. Do you believe his detainment is unlawful?
I do. I think it's pretty clear that he entered lawfully into the United States, and at the time of his detention, he was in what's considered a period of authorized stay. So what has happened to him is extremely disheartening.
Ronnie, you've been working on Dr. Kibret's bond hearing specifically. He was denied bond a week and a half ago, meaning he must remain in detention. Can you give us any details about the conditions he's being kept in at that facility in Oklahoma and what it's like to work with him while he's in detention?
Sorry, I just wanted to correct. Saran is the one working on his bond, so I'll let her answer this.
Okay. Saran, go ahead.
Yes, so the bond hearing has already passed at this point, and he was denied bond, but being able to work with him has been, it's been pretty decent in terms of being able to get him in meetings and things like that for purposes of the bond when it was being scheduled. But as of right now, his bond has passed. We are actually moving forward towards removal proceedings and focusing on that, as well as the habeas that is currently filed and pending for him.
Tell us about that habeas corpus lawsuit in Oklahoma claiming that his constitutional rights have been violated by this. Can you explain what that lawsuit alleges and what you're hoping from it?
Sure. So we filed a habeas roughly 3 weeks ago in the U.S. District Court for the Western District of Oklahoma. We're essentially challenging the lawfulness of his detention through that lawsuit. We're claiming that his detention violates both the due process clause of the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution, as well as it violates statutory and the regulatory framework that have been created both by Congress and U.S. government agencies related to affirmative applications. So through that lawsuit, we're asking the district court to order his immediate release. In the alternative, we're asking for other forms of relief if for whatever reason they deny it.
Now, could this case affect other cases that are currently involving Maryland residents?
Regarding the habeas case, they're individual. So whatever the judge issues in this case will only pertain to Dr. Kibret.
I guess his overall case, though, does that have any impact on anything else other than just his specific case?
We are hoping that with favorable court decisions, other courts would also follow suit with individuals that are similarly situated to him. But there's no way that we can say that for sure.
Now, can you share what you've heard from his community and how they've supported him since this happened?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Go ahead, Tom.
So his community has been extremely supportive when it comes to his case. His university in particular, the dean and the other professors at the university have been extremely involved in supporting his bond proceedings specifically when we were preparing for that. The number of professors and leaders within his university that provided support letters attesting to his character, his work ethic, the importance of his presence at the university, not only for the work he does and the research, which he is heavily involved in, but also for the students that he was supposed to be teaching starting this fall semester and who are at this point not being able to benefit from his experience and expertise.
Saran Berhe and Rania Dubinay are both lawyers working on the case of Dr. Berhanu Kibret, a University of Maryland professor who's been detained by ICE. Thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing the latest updates on the case.
Thank you.
Thank you.
After a quick break, we'll talk with educator Amy Tondro about the concerns teachers are having with the new school year. This is WYPR's News Roundup. I'm Matt Bush. Stay with us after this short break.
Hello, I'm Ryan Kennedy. I'm a WYPR member, and I live in Baltimore. WYPR is a mirror of Baltimore. It reflects the diversity, the quirkiness, the fun, the joie de vivre that is Baltimore. Local public radio is something that you can... And we need to have something that is our own in a world that's increasingly globalized. Local radio is like this friend that you always have in your backyard.
Support your local. Online at WYPR.org.
Practical Parenting, a podcast produced by GBMC, helps empower parents in the trenches and find joy in the magical mess of summer. The sun is out and so are the schedules. But don't worry, we have your back. New episodes drop every other Friday. Tune in to get all the resources, support, and confidence you need to thrive through the chaos. Practical Parenting, available on WYPR.org, the mobile app, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Support for WYPR comes from Reliable Technology Services, an IT service provider. In today's technology-driven world, data security is essential. RTS offers security solutions to help meet the needs of small to mid-sized businesses. 1-877-244-7592 or reliabletechnology.co. And from listeners like you.
And welcome back to WIPR's News Roundup. I'm Matt Bush. School is back in session. Teachers are busy buying their back-to-school supplies. It's not students. Teachers are doing it. One 2025 survey from Adopt a Classroom found that on average, teachers are spending $895 per year on classroom supplies. And according to another report, this from the Century Foundation and Groundwork Collaborative, prices on school supplies rose up to 11% this year. Salaries have also risen in Maryland to a $60,000 minimum in most of the state. That's tied to a new state requirement, though. So how does that math work out? And what else is on the minds of educators as the school year begins? University of Maryland Associate Professor of Elementary Literacy and a former elementary school teacher herself, Amy Tondro, joins us in the studio. Amy, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I know you teach teachers, but you also work with teachers who are in the classroom. What are you hearing from them as the school year starts in that almost $900 a year is going to classroom supplies, and that may be going up because of the rise in prices for classroom supplies?
Yeah, I mean, we know that this is a persistent issue for teachers. We know that they need things for their classroom that they're not getting from their districts, whether that's extra pencils or Kleenex and Clorox wipes or extra supplies for a fun science experiment. And teachers are getting those things because they know that their students need them. But they're often either paying themselves or creating wish lists, seeking donations from their family and friends and community. And the cost falls on those folks. And we also know that some students need things for their basic needs to be met. The cuts in SNAP benefits means more kids have food insecurity, and some students need things like deodorant and toothbrushes and toothpaste, and teachers are the ones who are coming in to close that gap.
Another thing that's unfortunately new for this year, maybe not new for this year, but certainly is happening going into this year, as we've been talking about in some of the earlier segments of the show, is ICE and this raid that took place outside of a city school earlier this year. As we said, ICE has told people that, or has told local leaders and Maryland leaders, they won't be conducting operations in schools, but we saw this one had take place outside of one earlier this year. Are teachers telling you anything about this? Is this something that's really creeping into their mind as the school year starts?
Absolutely. This is definitely on teachers' minds. What I'm hearing from teachers is backed up by a recent National Immigration Law Center study that shows that the escalating ICE presence creates community terror, that educators are really trying to comfort students through psychological and emotional trauma that they're experiencing. And, you know, kids are seeing this in their community at the bus stop or out their classroom windows, as you mentioned. And that means that that psychological distress impacts their academic learning, right? Obviously, if you're worried about if your parents are going to be there when you get home, it's going to be hard to focus on your math lesson. And we also know that that impacts absenteeism and enrollment, because families are strategically making decisions to keep students home because of fear for themselves and for the children.
In the city schools, it's a CEO. In the county schools in Baltimore, it's a superintendent. Both systems have new people in those positions this year. So what do teachers need from people who are in those positions as the head of a school district? What sorts of things do teachers need from them?
So I think that one of the things is to listen to teachers. I know that Dr. Dawson is doing a listening tour, and I think that that's great. So I think continuing to be engaged and listening to teachers about what they need. One of the things that teachers want is more agency to do the things that they know is best and responsive for their students. And so things like scripted curriculum that teachers are being asked to teach with fidelity and not deviate from, those curriculum are by design one size fits all and not meant for the kids that are in front of them. And so trusting teachers to do what they do best is really important. I think we also have to focus on the whole child beyond just test scores, because those test scores don't measure things like joy and social emotional competencies like collaboration and persistence and love of learning, and don't measure all the ways that these other issues that we've been talking about impact students' learning. I think the last thing I would highlight is the prevalence of technology and AI, and teachers need guidance and training on how to approach that. And we know that other countries are moving away from using a ton of technology in schools because especially for our youngest learners, the studies show that that is not beneficial to them. And so we need to think about the ways that school districts are taking up lots of new technology uncritically when we don't know what it does.
Amy Tondru is an associate professor of elementary literacy at the University of Maryland. Thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
The start of school is the start of a series of choices, some small, some bigger, choices that will shape us now and well into the future. Bill Heiser started as Baltimore County's school superintendent on July 1st, but this isn't where he thought he would be. He faced some of those choices along the way.
The day before my 18th birthday, my mom passed away. So as a senior, it was January 12th. My birthday is January 13th. The second thing that happened was a major, major injury to my ankle. I had chipped a bone in my ankle and had a pin through my shin to heal it. And back then, 35 years ago, to give you some time frame, healing was very different. Surgeries were very different. And I had a cast up to my knee. Then I had surgery, and then I had another cast up to my knee. So I was not playing for a long time. And so I was faced with a crossroads of, when I was choosing a college, where should I go to college, who should I play for, but more so, where should I go to school, where should I be a student? And being a student was a secondary in the past, but it became front and center when I had this injury. And I also needed people to care for me personally because I was grieving. And so I turned down multiple college offers to go across the country for scholarships, and I chose Loyola College. It was a small place. When I visited, it was a caring place. I met great people, and they also had an academic support program that, for some reason, as an 18-year-old, I didn't maybe make a lot of great decisions, and none of us do as 18-year-olds, but that one decision I made was pivotal in my life because it was a small environment that gave me all the supports I needed academically and social-emotionally. I played college soccer there, had a wonderful experience, met my girlfriend and now wife of 28 years there, was married there. So it's obviously a really important place to me and to us. I received a phone call after my fall of playing in that final year, and I was in a graduate program, and they said, hey, it was a random phone call. There were no cell phones then, and my phone in my dorm room rang, and it was the owner of the Baltimore Blast or the Baltimore Spirit at the time. The indoor soccer was before the MLS, and they let me know that I was drafted. And I thanked them very much, and I was really polite, but I right on the spot declined the offer. And I, you know, was sorry that they had used a draft pick on me, but I was in graduate school and I was going to have a career in education. And that was kind of my purpose from that point forward. Many of my friends went on to play. Professional teammates of mine the past 2 years I mentioned with the national team went on to careers in professional soccer and played their whole life and are coaches or like leaders in U.S. soccer now. So it's they're still friends, and it's but zero regrets. The education has, I don't know if it saved my life, but it certainly was pivotal in giving me a career and also a lifeline to help other people.
That's Bill Heiser, the new superintendent of Baltimore County Public Schools. His first day was July 1st, but Monday will be the first day of school for students in the county. In the city, Dr. Jermaine Dawson is the new Baltimore City Schools CEO, and he had this to share with the community as the year starts.
I know that we can be a beacon of excellence and a model for other school districts continuously throughout this nation. I come to this city as an educator by trade, a mathematician by training, but I also come here as someone who knows the transformative power of what a public school education can do in the life of a child.
When we come back, it's time for the weekend. We hear from actor Lance Cody Williams on his role in the new play, Bocking, and some other festivities ahead this weekend. This is WYPR's News Roundup. Stay with us.
Live from London, twice a day on weekdays and daily at weekends. NewsHour from the BBC, the day's most important international stories.
Many more people are joining these protests.
Another large-scale attack overnight.
With context and analysis from expert BBC journalists.
This is a city in defiance, scarred by tragedy.
NewsHour from the BBC.
Listen to NewsHour this morning at 9 and this afternoon at 3 on 88.1.
never forget the day I read a book.
I'm Tom Hall. On the next What Are You Reading? My guest is the managing editor of Be More Art magazine, Chelsea Lemon Fetzer. We'll talk about a new take on the infamous Dred Scott decision, Mrs. Dred Scott, A Life on Slavery's Frontier. Join us for What Are You Reading? Friday during All Things Considered, brought to you by Eye Candy Optician.
One of these days I'm going to do it again.
Check out the latest episode of Your Child's Brain, a podcast series produced by Kennedy Krieger Institute with assistance from WYPR. I'm Dr. Brad Schlager, president and CEO of Kennedy Krieger. Join me and my guests, Drs. Stephanie Morris and Jayshree Blakely, as we discuss neurofibromatosis and its impact on brain development. New episodes of Your Child's Brain are released on the first Thursday of every month at WYPR.org, KennedyKrieger.org/YCB, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And welcome back to WIPR's News Roundup. I'm Matt Bush, the news director of the award-winning WIPR news team. As we head into the weekend and the week ahead, there is no shortage of activities. The Maryland State Fair opens in Timonium this week with live animals, horse racing, concerts, and banana pudding churro nachos. Not sure if that's one food group or five or ten or somewhere in between all that. Now, if you're saving the fair for next weekend, because it does go for the following 2 weekends too, but you're still hungry, Ekumen, the people who brought you fried chicken and soft shell crab in a bow bun, are putting on a very food forward night market in Fells Point on Saturday and Sunday. Looking ahead to next week here at WYPR, we have also something to celebrate. Pass the Mic is going weekly. You've been hearing bits and pieces of the show all summer, but next week, hosts like you from the community will be speaking to guests they choose about issues important to them. The first episode is Tuesday, September 1st at 7:30, and it features the team behind Balking, Center Stage's new hit show. Lena Waithe, one of the producers, joins actor Kaylin Allen and writer Preston Crowder. But this is not for everyone, so if you have some sensitivities around religion or sexuality, be forewarned. Quoting from the Center Stage website, warning, this play contains explicit content and is very risque. Okay, earlier in the week, we were able to catch up with another star from the show.
I got a call from Stevie, and he told me about the play and the role. And when he told me that it would be a pimp pastor. And then I came on towards the end, and what I would be doing immediately said yes.
That is Lance Cody Williams, and he was even shocked when he first read the play. He's a Baltimore native, and it's coming full circle. He used to be an intern at Center Stage.
I remember being a little kid being like, one day that'll be me, and now I'm back home working here. In Baltimore, it's something happening in my city. I still call it my city. It's something happening here that you can feel the pride in the street and the people that you meet. People say good morning. And it's just a vibe where it's becoming more warm. Like, I'm really getting the feeling of Charm City.
They've extended Balking's run at Center Stage to September 13th. Remember, you can hear the Pass the Mic with all of them on Tuesday, September 1st at 7:30. Pass the Mic's going there permanently. Tuesday evenings at 7:30 here on WYPR. You can listen to them wherever you get podcasts too. Anytime. That is it for this week's show. Next week we're off for Labor Day, and we hopefully you are too. But we'll be back on September 11th. It's been 25 years since the attacks. If you have stories of that day that you want to share and what you remember from that day and the days afterwards and how much it has changed you 25 years later, send them our way. Leave us a voice message with our app. Just tap the mic at the bottom and tell us what you have to say. You can also follow us on Facebook and Instagram. I'm Matt Bush, the news director at WIPR. We have a great team supporting us on this show. Thank you to them, and thank you for listening.
I'm Dr. Alethea Tucker.
I'm Kevin Sheeran.
I'm Genevieve DeMai.
My name is Bree Reed.
I'm up there filmmaker D. Watkins.
Sometimes I feel like there is so much going on in the world right now.
Tell me about it.
Like, every year it's an outbreak or a conflict or an election.
It can be overwhelming.
How can I possibly keep up?
Stay up to date on what's happening in your community with WYPR. We're a local public radio station that connects you to your neighborhoods and the globe through our partnerships with NPR and the BBC. You don't have to feel like you're just watching the world. Be a part of it now. Stay tuned to 88.1 WYPR.
A study out from UCLA looks at how immigration raids impact small businesses and the communities they serve.
Key commercial corridors in the city turned into ghost towns almost kind of overnight, and they've had that lasting effect.
I'm Kristen Schwab. How immigration policy changes local economies. Next time on Marketplace.
Marketplace comes your way this evening at 6 here on WIPR, Maryland's NPR news station at 88.1, where we are community amplified. We are Baltimore Public Media, WIPR and WIPR HD1 Baltimore, WIPF Frederick, and WIPF.